Here's Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, brought to you by Finance It. What's happening, Bob?
Yes, guy.
Yes, guy.
No, you're not allowed to say it. He doesn't like it when people say it.
I know. That's why I did it.
What's he going to do to you anyway?
I like Jimmy. He's a good man.
Well, we do too, but we like Yes Guy, No Guy as well, and we want to keep using it.
Absolutely. Go for it.
Yeah, I think we will.
Let him get his lawyers.
Yeah, exactly.
Sue us.
Try it.
That'd be great.
And it's not like he doesn't get credit. I mean, he did invent it.
No kidding. That's what pisses him off, that nobody gives him credit anymore.
I give him full credit.
He hates Pierre LeBrun, I think, because LeBrun always uses it.
Really?
Yes Guy.
Without authorization.
Nothing.
Well, what are you going to do?
What kind of authorization do you think Mark Bergevin is going to have in the upcoming future, Bobby? We were discussing
really
the
good,
Habs because we
don't really know. That's a really good... Oh, man, I'll tell you, that game last night, boy, that was dreadful. And so here's the thing. So the Canadian season has gone down the tubes, hasn't gone the way they anticipated. But I think, you know, the premise I've been operating under, and one that I think is generally accurate, is that owner Jeff Molson and Mark Bergevin are on the same page in terms of where things are at and where they need to go.
But how can they be on the same page, Bobby? Doesn't Molson say to Bergevin, but you did this?
Yes, absolutely. But what I was going to get to, and I couldn't get the words out properly, would be that we're not going to do crisis management in the middle of the season. So you're our guy, and let's try and work our way out of this. And that's the plan. I think the same plan is going on, very similar to what's going on in Edmonton. You know, they don't want to pull the plug on the coach. They don't want to pull the plug on the general manager. They want to try to work through it and what have you. The point I'm going to make, though, is if you have games like the Canadians had last night where they basically were a no-show in a game that meant a lot to Claude Julien going back to Boston and there should have been a better effort, if they continue to lay eggs to that level, then you do have to get into crisis management because it's going to, as bad as their season has been, and it's been bad, it can get a whole lot worse. Because even, like, you know, they played the Canadians coming out of the bye there, and that was a good hockey game. And they had the lead, and they ended up losing it. They got a point in overtime or a shootout, whatever it was, in that first of the two meetings between the two teams. Good representative effort, nothing wrong with that. Then they go into Boston and they don't even break a sweat, and that's unacceptable. And if that's the hockey that they're going to play more often than not down the stretch, then that's where I say, you know, all bets on anything are off, because in the same in Edmonton, you know, you gotta win, you gotta sprinkle some wins in the games that you lose. You've got to be competitive and show that the thing is still on. As bad as it's gone in the big picture, in the micro, you know, this thing's not off the rails completely, totally. It was off the rails totally last night. And if they keep playing like that, then that's where the crisis part comes in. And then that's when all guys like you and me and everybody else ask that question, well, what's going to happen to Bergevin? And I can't imagine that Claude Julien's even in the crosshairs at all, just because of the circumstance of how, you know, he just took over late last season. So, but in Edmonton, you know, both guys are in the crosshairs. And if they finish with a representative effort, even if they miss the playoffs, well, then they'll do their forensic audit at the end of the year to figure out who's to blame. Does not somebody need to take the fall here? But, you know, teams prefer not to say this is a crisis and we have to fire a general manager or fire a coach in the middle of the season.
Where do you think Carey Price kind of lies and all? We were talking about him earlier. Does he ever become a guy that either he says, I'm not in for this, or the team says, hey, we're blowing this up, you want any part of this, or what? Is he just staying there no matter what?
Yeah, that's a good question. Only he would know that for sure. And I've heard, like, when people talk about the potential solution in Montreal, you know, the blow it up, I'm not sure that there's an easy blow it up there.
In yeah, a lot of guys under
price.
Contract.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's Montreal, and you've got Price in his prime, And you've, you know, you do have some other assets. Their big problem is, quite aside from everything else, they're no good at center. I mean, there's not another team in the National Hockey League that's, I don't know, off the top of my head, I can't think of another team in the NHL that is weak at the center ice position, as weak at the center ice position as the Montreal Canadiens.
Nothing they don't even have close.
They don't have a number one center at all. They don't really have a number two center at all. I mean, Thomas Plekanec used to be a number two, but at this stage of his career, he's not. Philip Deneau, on a really, really good night, when Philip Deneau's cooking and playing 100% of what he's got,
maybe
he might look like a two, but we know he's not. What he is he's a three. On a good team, Philip Deneau is a three. And on a really good team, he might be a 3B, closer to a 4 than a 3. But he's a good hockey player. I'm not taking anything away from Phil Deneau. It's not his fault that there's not a 1 and there's not a 2 on Montreal. And they tried Drouin, and it hasn't worked thus far. They tried Galchenyuk, and it didn't work. And I guess my point would be, until they address that, and I don't know how they address it, because even if they're really, if this thing goes totally off the rails, and they're picking in the top three. Let's say they don't have the first overall pick, but they're picking 2, 3, 4, or 5. There's not a center to be found at the top end of this draft. Not one center. It's all defensemen and all wingers, and mostly wingers in those spots. And then there's nothing wrong with getting a Brady Tkachuk. You saw him. Oh, he's a hell of a player. Philip Zadina, take that guy all day long. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the big Russian Svechnikov. But, you know, in terms of a positional need, you know, where's an Austin Matthews or a Jack Eichel when the Montreal Canadiens need one, if they're going to finish that poorly in the standings and be picking 2, 3, or 4?
Bob, we were talking before about Erik Karlsson, and there were some interesting comments from Pierre Dorion. So I'm going to quote you what TSN 1200 tweeted. They said, Dorion says his first priority is to re-sign Erik Karlsson, but who knows? There may be a mind-blowing deal thrown at him, which they would be required to listen to. Dorion reminded that even Gretzky was traded. What do you make of that?
I think it's just verbalizing and saying up front what we've been saying since it became apparent, since the whole Doughty Karlsson, in early December there, early to mid-December, when Doughty started talking about, you know, what he might do and what he might not do. And then he drew Karlsson into the act, and then Eugene got involved, and the whole thing kind of blew up into a cause celeb. But the official position of the Ottawa Senators, and we knew it to be true and we reported it at the time, was they are obliged to listen on any offer for Erik Karlsson. And that's what they're going to do. Now, the reality of them perhaps trading Erik Karlsson between now and the deadline this year, I don't think is very, very real at all, but you always allow for the possibility of something coming out of left field. But I think it becomes a jump ball this summer. Go either way. I mean, that's when you sit down across from Karlsson after July 1, assuming he's still on the team. And I always like to say, look into his eyes as you make the offer and give him his 8 years at $12 million or whatever and say, okay, there you go. Are you going to stay? And if he's like, you know what, I don't know, I'm not sure, okay, then that's when you pick up the phone and you start making your calls and you start preparing to trade Erik Karlsson. Because the reality is, if he's not prepared to agree to terms before the next season begins, I don't think a market like Ottawa can afford to do what the Islanders are happy to do with John Tavares, and that is play it out.
Don't you get the impression, Bob, or I would anyway, from my standpoint, if I'm another GM and it gets to a point where Karlsson's going to be available in July or at the draft, I would have to believe, or furthermore, have to know he's going to sign with me long term. Do you think that would be a part of the contingency?
Yeah, I think you're certainly opening the door for those types of machinations, for sure. You know, there'll be offers just to take him at face value with a year left on his deal, but those offers won't be nearly as good. It would be in the Senators' best interest to let Karlsson go to free agency a year early. And now somebody might argue, well, if you're a team that really wants Erik Karlsson, why would you give up a King's ransom to get him on July 1st of 2018 when you can get them for free on July 1st of 2019. But that's the premium you would pay for getting in and getting it done ahead of time. And that is that's a worthwhile premium and one you might pay dearly for. If you know you're locking Erik Karlsson up for the next seven years, because you can't, you could actually even do a sign and trade. I mean, if you wanted to get the 8 years, if Karlsson really wanted the 8 years and you wanted the ability to give it to him, he could sign the deal. You could cook the whole deal with Ottawa, come up with the acquisition price, and let Karlsson sign that contract with the Ottawa Senators, and then have the Senators flip it over now under contract for the next 9 years.
Bobby, we have a Jerry's for you.
One of JVR, Bozak, or Komarov will be traded before the trade deadline.
Do you have a percentage on that?
What's the lowest I can go without saying zero?
One.
I think there should be rules on Jerry's. Got to be increments of 10. Can we put that into effect?
But yeah, for you,
Noodles,
we can.
That because he says 6.2.
Yeah, Noodles does like decimals and.
Just trying to be different.
Yeah.
I'll say 10%, which is to suggest I really don't believe it's going to happen, but you have to allow for the possibility that maybe, just maybe, somebody comes out of left field with an offer that makes the Leafs go, whoa, we can't not do that. We got to do that, you know. But I think all three guys will be with the Leafs through to the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think I said basically the same thing. Because I think fans would freak out. You're going to the playoffs. They're 11 points into the playoffs. Like, people are panicking here in Toronto. I mean, remember where we were 2-3 years ago? They were a disaster.
Yeah, it would be nice to get something for JVR. It would be nice to get something for Bozak. It would be nice to get something for Komarov. But getting something for them, a draft pick or some fair to middling prospect, not, that doesn't help the Leafs in what they're trying to do right now, which is make the playoffs and make some noise in the playoffs. But having JVR and Bozak, it's a funny dynamic, too. Like, people say, well, which one would you trade? And most people would say, Komarov, because he's Leafs value, except we know what the coach thinks of him. Coach loves him. You know, it's a 24-minute man, that one. Babcock's like, and Babcock will be the first to say, and whatever you think of Komarov, his value increases in the playoffs because now the stakes are higher and it's grittier and harder and everything becomes harder, and so he's the guy that you want in your lineup. So then they say, okay, well then let's get rid of Bozak. Well, wait a second. You know, what happens then at the center position? They're worried about who's playing, who's the fourth line. The quiz question the other night was, who's the fourth line center? Is it Dominic Moore? Is it Freddie? Is it somebody we don't know yet as an acquisition? Well, if you trade Bozak for a bunch of draft picks or some 19-year-old kid that's not on your team, who's playing third line center for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Right.
That's a concern. So then they look at, well, it can't be Bozak because positionally we need him maybe more than anybody. So then it's like JVR. We got lots of wingers. We can score goals. We'll be okay. And then you're like looking at it and you go, man, the guy's got the least amount of ice time amongst the Toronto Maple Leafs top 10 forwards, and he's got the most goals next to Austin Matthews. Well, we're going to get rid of that guy before the playoffs? Are we crazy? And so you kind of left shaking your head saying, I'd be curious to see what the offer would be that would get Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock to say, okay, yeah, we're prepared to live without one or two or any three of those guys going into the playoffs. Can't imagine it, but I suppose there might be one out there. You never know.
Thank you, Bob. Enjoy it tonight.
Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
Here's Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It.